So proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming.
And good morning. You may be seated. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. And that, of course, is Renee Fleming, the opera singer, singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl earlier this year. It is a familiar song, of course, but how much do you know about that national anthem? One thing you should know is that it's 200 years old this year, and today we'll be talking about it. Later today, we'll skip forward in history to the summer of 64 and take a look at a project that documented the civil rights struggle on film. After that, Brian McTavish will bring us our holiday weekend to-do list. But first, a song that we'll probably be hearing quite a bit of this weekend, the Star-Spangled Banner. Dr. Amity Bryson is chair of the music department at Avila University here in Kansas City. Amity, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Glad you're here. So Francis Scott Key, we all learned in school at some point, wrote this song, but that might be about where the knowledge of it ends for a lot of us. Who was he again?
Well, Francis Scott Key was an amateur poet. He probably had some training in the law, and he was overseeing the release of a prisoner during the War of 1812 and was inspired by the flag still flying the next morning and penned the poem.
What was he doing out there watching the flag all night?
Well, he had been on the ship the whole night, and he was negotiating for the release of this prisoner and had been working through that, and I'm not sure they expected to win that particular battle. So
right.
He was surprised.
The poem, I guess, it's called The Defense of Fort McHenry, right?
Right, right.
And they did win the battle.
Yes, yes. And so, you know, the sun rises. It's very poetic. You can just imagine sort of being, and I think water tends to make one feel isolated. And he was definitely on the ship of the enemy. And so you see we're the winners. That's got to feel good.
It's such a good story that it almost seems maybe like it's too good a story to be true. Is this the real history, or is there a myth that sort of developed around this song?
The night that his experience is very real. There are definitely some myths involved with the hymn itself. It was based on a popular tune that was not unusual in the 19th century at all. This had been a popularized tune actually at a gentleman's society in London, which is a little bit interesting to pull. It's not surprising to use a borrowed tune, but to borrow back from London, who was the very group they were.
So it's the secret revenge of Great Britain is that they actually, it's their music that we sing as our national anthem.
Absolutely. But it's significantly changed. What we may not know is that today, Renee Fleming sounds beautiful this morning, but it's significantly slower. It's popular to add lots of tunes, and people take little turns. You know, Beyonce's going to hold it longer here than somebody else. Then there's the whole Beyonce drama of did she really sing it or did she lip sync it? There are many elements to add, but it's different, and music does change over time with the society.
Well, I want to talk about that because this is not just a piece of music. It takes on this social significance that's bigger. But before we do that, let's sort of jump back to the historical setting where it comes from. And of course, the national anthem was written in 1814, I guess.
Right, right.
So but when you don't have iTunes, when you don't have record players, how does music become a national song?
Exactly. Well, we have to realize who was in power. And this gentleman's club, these were certainly white men of a wealthy stature, and they had the opportunity to hear it. And then it's passed on through what we might call an oral type of opportunity. So they hear it. But the interesting thing is it was written for a solo trained singer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have again modified that significantly by everybody at the ballpark. Do you sing along or do you not? And these expectations that one would sing. We're coming off the World Cup and we hear all of these national anthems from all of these countries and people sing and there's this united element. And yet, with the national anthem, it was written for a soloist.
Yeah. How did it get from being this song, this popular song, mm-hmm. which apparently other people could sing, to this song that is famously difficult to
right,
pull off?
Right, right. Well, and you think about the difficult nature, it's the biggest element is the range. It's nearly two octaves. It's about an octave and a half.
From that low, oh, say, can you see at the
exactly,
start, to that home high, of the brave. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And, I think free is actually
Land
the highest
free,
note.
And then the
yes,
home of the brave.
Which, again, ties in historically. We have something called text painting. And so often in music, the most important words are the highest words. And it's free. That is the highest word, which is so important and certainly reflective. I think society, we as a group, we want to participate. I think that's very American, so to speak.
As a music professor, I guess I'm curious for your analysis of this piece of music. I mean, it is such a part of our lives that it almost defies being analyzed that way.
Right.
But
right.
But I mean, is it a good song?
Absolutely. Actually, yes. It really is. It's well written. That tune is very. It's shaped very. Actually, in some ways, simply, there's not a lot of dissonance. One would say the notes are evenly spaced. And so those thirds that you jump up and down, yes, you may go a far way, whether up or down, but it's evenly spaced.
Okay, so help the non-musicians out there. When you say the thirds that you jump up and down, what are you talking about?
So they're
and
not notes.
And you can sing if you want to on the radio. It's okay.
Excellent. They're not notes that are right next to each other. They're notes that are, there's a space in between them. And they're evenly spaced. So the closer things are, the more crunchy, the more dissonant they might be. And honestly, there's not a lot of dissonance, which in the 19th century, that was the hot new thing. And so in some ways, the national anthem and this particular piece, and especially coming out of London, I'm sorry, we have to admit that music out of England, they were still all about Shakespeare and they didn't care so much about their music knowledge. And so everybody in Europe is doing all of these extra fancy things. And in a lot of ways, the melody itself, the notes, they're quite simple, but they cover a lot of ground. And so as modern singers, we tend to... that range is tough for a lot of people.
You teach vocal performance, right?
I do.
Have you sung this song publicly?
Many times.
What's it like to perform it?
Well, there is always a bit of nervousness. There's nothing worse. Nobody wants to be Roseanne Barr. Nobody wants to mess it up. You know, you really want to do a good job. And certainly there is a patriotic element. You should be honorable when one sings it. In fact, when teaching my students, we talk a lot about doing a good job and really doing it well, because there's nothing worse than singing it poorly and people get offended and they'll tell you about it.
Right. And everybody notices.
Exactly. And we all have nothing worse than forgetting the words. We obviously all have the national anthem memorized, but my own personal ritual is I always physically write out all the words waiting to go out and sing it.
Wow.
But that's the way I remember things. So,
it seems like there are certain words that are used in the national anthem that we use almost nowhere else. I can't think of many phrases at times when I've referred to the ramparts and things gallantly streaming, and yet they've just become so commonplace.
Exactly. Well, poets and musicians tend to use those words. But, you know, when we open up the national anthem to everyone else, perilous is a word we say, and that may be a pet peeve for me as a voice teacher. Everyone, when they sing it, it becomes this perilous, and there's this weird vowel in the middle of it. And it doesn't have to be there.
It's an I.
Yeah, it is. It's very simple.
There are actually several verses. I mean, we all know the first verse, you say, but people don't know there were four verses.
Exactly. There are many verses. And certainly that night he penned all four. But during the temperance movement, there were women who were changing those. And that ties into some of the myth of the national anthem. This gentleman's society, when you fast forward nearly 100 years, it was seen as this gentleman's society. We think of it as a pub. You know, was this a drinking song? And within the temperance movement, when Woodrow Wilson and Congress were trying to decide whether this should be our national anthem, it was the temperance movement that got really upset. Oh, we can't have a drinking song be the national anthem.
But there it is.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I want to ask our listeners what they think of our national anthem. Have you ever had the honor of singing our national anthem? Do you think there's some other song that would better serve the purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org. Tell us, do you sing along? What's the hard part for you? You can also tweet at us. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Amity Bryson is our guest. She's a professor of music at Avila University. Amity, the one we know, the tune we know, the rhythm we know, isn't always the way it was performed, I understand.
Exactly. They weren't bouncy like we might have them today. It was significantly faster. And actually, today in Washington, D.C., at the Library of Congress, Thomas Hampson is doing a recital along with the celebration of the 200th birthday of the National Anthem. And it will be performed. He will do the solo component like they would have done at that gentleman's club. But there's an answer. There's a response to it that's sung in four-part harmony.
Wow.
So can you imagine sort of this back-and-forth singing is a whole new deal?
Well, we have an arrangement from 1854 that we found a recording of. It's not a vocal arrangement. It's an orchestral one. But take a listen and notice the differences. There's definitely some places where the rhythm has been smoothed out.
Exactly. That's a great way to describe it. It's smoothed out. I would call our current version much more dotted, much more buoyant. And this is very smooth. Again, it's very even. But they also had this response where other people came in and sang as well. And so while it really was written for a soloist, there was opportunity for collaboration within a group.
You know, a lot of the mythology or the energy around the National Anthem comes not from the music itself, but from the ways it's been performed
right.
And the places it's performed. You mentioned one of the really negative examples, Roseanne Barr's sort of classic mess-up of
yes.
the anthem, followed by a rude gesture that sort of added insult to injury
yes.
for many.
Yes.
But there have been many sort of classic performances that people talk about for decades after.
Absolutely. And it doesn't have to be pure on one sense. Certainly Renee Fleming and her performance this year at the Super Bowl, she's the first ever opera singer to sing at the Super Bowl.
Hmm.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, and to express that art form in a large group is fantastic. But Jimi Hendrix is a really significant performance, and that is not pure by a lot of musician standpoints, but it was raw, and it was a time that he really had angst, and he was able to put that forward, and he was able to utilize the music. We heard the older performance of it that smoothed out. You know, you can almost fast forward and compare that to Jimi Hendrix and his much less smoothed out. And there was a reason to do that.
Yeah, and what was the reason? This was at Woodstock, right?
Yes.
Where Jimi Hendrix on the electric guitar
mm-hmm.
plays the national anthem. What
right.
what was the what do you think unpack that? Why
sure,
was it so
sure.
significant?
As a country, obviously we were in turmoil at that time, whether that be the political choices that were being made, the war that was at hand, the generational conflict that Woodstock represents. And also, you played an instrumental version, but so often the national anthem is performed by a vocalist. And so to perform it on the guitar, and again, a guitar that is very Americanized mm-hmm. and very just sort of powerful and individual, but not a violin, which would have been the much more European, much more original nature. And so there's sort of this act of performing it in a way that is contrary to its birth, but yet it's very powerful and it's very passionate.
Yeah, I guess it raises the larger question of why even have a national anthem? I mean, what is this thing that requires us as a nation to have a song?
Right. Well, a lot of that goes actually back to the origination of this moment. In the 19th century, we're really in music history, we're looking at a time of nationalism and exoticism. Those two things sort of partnered as flip sides of the same coin.
Hmm.
And the United States is certainly a very young country, and they're searching for their identity. But countries have to represent your ideology through sound is really important. And so music provides that opportunity. And so everybody else has one. We should have one, too.
Yeah, and do other nations regard their national anthems with such reverence as the United States does?
Absolutely. I think Italy comes to my mind immediately. And the Italian national anthem was very much like the American national anthem. When we look at the French Revolution, and they had a lot of the same ideals and those images coming out of freedom and justice for all. Theirs is significantly a smaller range. Mm-hmm. Everyone sings along. It's very collaborative, and they take great pride in that. I think we've seen examples of that pride. I'm going to mention the World Cup again. They tried to truncate those national anthems, and I read about many of the countries continued singing. The fans that are in the audience said, wait a minute, that's not our whole song. And the players were so visibly moved by that response. It's music and an opportunity to say, hey, I believe in you, and we're on the same team. And there's a power in music that is...
Well, yeah, it occurs to me that there's very few things that make everyone stop what they're doing, mm-hmm. and all point the same direction,
exactly.
Or I'll be quiet.
Exactly.
And yet, at every baseball game and every car race and right. Every school concert, we all do that for this.
Exactly. And certainly there is that reverence. We have been trained since children, you know, to you stand and you act appropriately in this moment of time to sort of have this. I think the national anthem for the United States is also undeniably connected to the flag, and certainly the flag and the raising of the flag and how we treat the flag. That's been a contentious discussion in the United States for a very long time.
It has. We'd love to hear our listeners' views on that, on the place of the flag and the anthem in our national culture. Do you sing along when it's played? Give us a call at 816-235-2888, 235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org. That's what Gary did. He says, I get a kick out of the fact that the verse Americans sing of the national anthem really is one long question. Oh, say, can you see? We get the answer to the question in the last verse, but Americans don't know that verse. Gary says, so we know the question in the song. We don't know the answer. Maybe Americans like it that way as a testament to the ever unfinished status of our national experiment. Amity Bryson, what do you think?
Well, it certainly is one big long question. And I think we forget that as one sings all of those phrases, you forget that you're still asking the same question. And you're right that the final verse does answer it, that triumph shall wave. And yet I think that response, as far as constantly questioning, or does one simply answer it in their own mind and in their own spirit at that moment? You know, very often we talk about the baseball games or different things. Lots of my hometown growing up, there was that guy who, as soon as that national anthem, we got to Brave, and he would scream, who's going to win tonight? You know, and so there are tags that I think communities on a smaller level start to add to that as well. And small groups and individuals answer that question for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the fourth verse, I'm looking here at the actual text, and it reminds me of another element of the words that doesn't really come through in the first verse, but comes through very strongly in the fourth. Blessed with victory and peace, may the heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust. And the Star-Spangled Banner in triumph shall wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave. It's a religious hymn, and you called it
Absolutely.
A hymn a little
bit. It is, yes. A hymn in its truest form is any time that you have the same music that you can repeat with new words. And so we start with the question, and we can continue going. Do we have the attention span to continue singing, or we can stick with the first verse? But it certainly is, and certainly at the time that of the War of 1812, it was a very God-fearing nation. And this element of In God We Trust is on our monikers, and yet we are also a country born out of religious freedom.
You mentioned the things that individual communities sort of tack on.
Yes.
And of course, here in Kansas City, it's difficult at any event to get through the song without Home of the Brave, Land of the Free, and Home of the Chiefs
being
shouted.
Exactly. Well, I think we have a few other teams around, too. The Sporting KC may start.
For some reason, the Chiefs are the only ones who get shouted.
Exactly. Yeah. And the Royals, yay.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. If you have a question for Amity Bryson or a comment about our national anthem, Paige is calling from Midtown. Paige, welcome to Up to Date.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm a longtime listener. I just wanted to mention, I've been in choir for a long time. I was in a choir in middle school, and our teacher at Lewisburg High School, Mrs. Scheffler, basically taught us all the harmonies, and we'd sing them over and over and over and over and over. They were beaten into us. So every time I sing the national anthem now, I always notice myself going into like a second soprano part or doing some of the harmonies, and it kind of messes up other people around me, but I definitely know all of the words and all of the right notes, and it's kind of made that aspect of the national anthem more interesting when I hear other versions of it.
Paige, I appreciate that call. Amity, does that resonate with your experience?
Oh, and we have to thank all the music teachers for all that they have trained and done. There really are lots of arrangements and a lot of harmonies. I do a vocal jazz arrangement with my choir, and again, those harmonies start happening. It's unfortunate that other people, it messes them up at times because everybody's used to the melody. But it was originally intended to be a harmonized song. And what a beautiful image that is of music, you know, that we can create harmony. And again, if we can go back to, yes, it's a beautiful piece with beautiful lyrics, but the act of performing it is really amazing. And so, dear Paige, for adding that harmony, that's a wonderful imagery of how we work together.
We had an email from Betsy. She says, I always enjoy when they play the national anthem to start a dog show. It's usually 8 a.m. There's no one there but the exhibitors, but we all stop, and it's a moment of pride and unity.
Absolutely. It is amazing the number of places that it is performed. I was at a triathlon last weekend, and we stopped and did the national anthem before anyone started. It's really become something very different than it was originally intended. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Music should change over time. It should adapt with society and culture. And one of the things, let's hope we're not in a lot of wars when we need to sing that. But and so we do it at sporting events.
Right.
And it become there is a relaxedness to that. You know, nobody dies at the end of the game.
Right.
But there's still significance in that performance and remembering those elements.
So this year is the 200th anniversary. There's a lot of celebrations and observances connected with the song. I understand you mentioned the one at the Library of Congress happening today.
Today, Thomas Sampson is actually a contemporary of Renee Fleming. It's very, and they're both very American artists, and so they're very iconic. When we think about refined culture, whether it be opera or orchestra, we do still have a European bent to what we do, and so to have American artists coming back to American music is very exciting.
We had a tweet from a listener at KCUR Up to Date, said one of the most unique and memorable renditions of the anthem is Marvin Gaye at the 1983 NBA All-Star Game. We've talked already here both positive and negative examples, from Renee Fleming and Jimi Hendrix to Roseanne Barr. I'm curious, Amity, is there one particular performance of the song, one rendition, time when you heard it or were even present for it, that stands out in your memory?
For me, as a musician, performing it myself is really significant. And to have opportunities and different things. Once on the 4th of July, I was in our nation's capital and was a part of a performance of the national anthem. And that certainly, I think it's not just about what others hear, it's what you can give back. And so that's a special element. But I think Marvin Gaye may have been one of the first popular artists then at that NBA All-Star Game. That was a significant moment.
That
so when we cross genres, that's exciting.
That is exciting. That's Amity Bryson. She teaches music at Avila University. She's a singer herself. Amity, thank you so much for being
with
us.
Thank you for having me.